course it does. Well then, Boxy, I suppose since you gave me your name, I will give you mine. I am Edward Allen, spymaster to His Majesty Emperor Joseph Frederick von Einhardt III.
He went down on one knee and stared deeply into the mimic's face, which caused the monster to recoil and shiver in fear.
And I will have you answer some questions regarding that four-armed demon back there and the big glowing crater far to the north.
General Information. Edward Gordon Allen, Leader of the Gilded Hand. Human, Ascendant. Male, 103 years old. Level 100 Rogue, Max. Level 75 Spy, Max. Level 59 Occult Alchemist. 4030 out of 4030 HP, plus 7.5 per second. 1885 out of 1885 MP, plus 3 per second. Attributes: Strength 245, Dexterity 964, Agility 645, Endurance 757, Intelligence 377, Wisdom 300, Luck 120, Mental Fortitude 82, Charisma 172, Perception 342.
Part 2.
Boxy woke up with its usual violent flailing.
Help!
Or at least it tried to. In the next instant, it was made painfully aware of two solid metal clamps that were bolted onto its imitation wood surface. They completely encircled its body as if it was a barrel, preventing its maw from opening up. Perhaps it was a good thing the mimic had been knocked out. Having those braces affixed to its body would have been incredibly painful to experience. Whatever damage it suffered as a result of the operation had already healed up. That only made its current situation even worse. Its wounds had closed up around the steel screws holding its bindings, causing its flesh to fuse with the foreign objects. It would be impossible to take these things off without having chunks of its own body ripped out. Those were hardly all of the restraints, however. The monster was hanging inside a cubic cage that was about 2 meters long, wide, and tall. It was being suspended by four heavy-duty chains, which connected those metal clamps to each upper corner of its new prison. The series of vertical and horizontal bars were made out of an ominous-looking black metal, and judging by the low buzzing and blue sparks that occasionally leapt between them, the bars were currently electrified. If the mimic hadn't been as firmly strung up as it was, it would have swung into the metal and electrocuted itself without meaning to. As for the source of the electrical charge, that was most likely the large metal box attached to the outside of the cage. Its faceplate had a few switches and dials on it, and two bright blue wires connected its insides to the cage. Boxy peeked inside the thing using its magical perception, seeing a complicated hodgepodge of wiring and circuitry and a glowing tank of shimmering, bright blue liquid. That must have been the fuel supplying power to the cage. Now that it had properly regained consciousness, the monster began to remember the situation it was in. A human had completely defeated it with a single blow. After introducing himself as Edward, he then poured some strange liquid onto the mimic which made it pass out. And now it was here. Where was here, though? The room the cage was sitting in seemed to be a large jail cell, probably inside the local keep's dungeon. That would be the lock-them-up-and-throw-away-the-key type of dungeon, not the there's-a-giant-exploding-shiny-in-the-middle-of-it kind that Boxy was born in. The walls, floor, and ceiling were nothing but plain stone bricks. Well, aside from the rubber mat underneath the cage insulating it from the rest of the room. For some reason, there was an empty wooden chair directly in front of—
Finally awake!
A voice came from somewhere in front, causing the mimic to panic. It then recalled that the old man who captured it was somehow able to elude the creature's magical perception. There were a number of ways one could avoid detection through mystical means, and the culprit, in this case, was the level 80 rogue skill called Obfuscate. Boxy wasn't aware such a thing existed, though, so it was completely lost as to how such a thing was possible. The most it could do was confirm that the voice came from somewhere in front, so the mimic grew a large feline eye on top of its lid, where a chest's lock might be. Once it was armed with a more mundane type of vision, Edward once more appeared before it. He was sitting cross-legged in the chair right outside the cage and took the blinking yellow eye as a sign that the monster was indeed awake.
"Very good," he said in a calm manner. "Now then, do grow back that head so we can have words. I'm sure... Oh, you already did. Never mind, then."
The sheer speed at which Zira's flawlessly sculpted face appeared out of the monster's front caught him a little bit unawares. It looked so real, too. As if someone had cut off a woman's head, shaved it clean, bleached the skin, then glued it onto a chest. The man's eyes seemed to linger on the pseudo-succubus's pointed ears, which were normally hidden by her silky long hair. The spymaster took out a small, leather-bound notebook and a never-ending quill. He flipped the booklet open to a blank page and scribbled, "Erosa Mimic Interrogation," at the very top as a sort of title. Then got down to business.
"Let's begin, then. First of all, why use that appearance?"
He gestured at Zira's pointy-eared face.
"It's easy,"
Boxy answered in a hoarse voice completely mismatched with the beautiful face it was using. It was much closer to its natural way of speech rather than that of the sultry succubus.
"Easy how?" inquired Edward.
"I know it the best."
"Uh-huh."
He wrote down, "Elf-witch connection?" on the first line.
"And who is it you're imitating?"
"Snack."
"I mean, what does this individual mean to you?"
"She is Snack."
"What is her name?"
"Snack."
Edward sighed sharply. This was only his third time speaking to a monster capable of both reason and language, so he had forgotten that one had to let go of certain expectations when speaking to such creatures. Some would argue he should just put the squeeze on his suspect, but he knew from experience that torture was not a viable method of gathering information. His way of interrogating prisoners was much faster, more reliable, and far less messy, although it did require a certain amount of patience.
"Okay, I'll bite. Who's Snack?" he asked.
"My thing."
Make that a lot of patience.
"Where is Snack right now?"
"The Beyond."
"So it's a demon? Then how come it's called Snack?"
He was keenly aware demons usually had long names that were nigh impossible to say correctly without a certain amount of practice.
"Very tasty, but not very filling."
"Right. And what species of demon is she?"
"Succubus."
"So that face you're showing me belongs to a succubus?"
"Yes."
"And you call her Snack because you... like eating her?"
"Yes."
The spymaster quickly crossed out "elf connection" and wrote "perverted box" next to it.
"Then what of the red-skinned, four-armed demon that was reportedly with you? Is she your ally?"
"Yes."
He quickly added "nose four-armed demon" to his notes.
"What is your relationship with it?"
"She is my thing."
He circled the words "perverted box" and underlined them. He then raised an eyebrow at his own notes.
"How are either of those your things, exactly?"
"Contracted to me."
"You're the summoner?"
"Yes."
"So you're a warlock?"
"Yes."
The human went silent for a few seconds, then abruptly stood up and walked away somewhere, outside the mimic's line of sight. There was the sound of a door opening and some distant voices were heard, but Boxy couldn't make out anything intelligible. Edward returned a few moments later and took a seat, then continued the interrogation.
"Who taught you how to summon her?"
"Carl."
"Does he have a last name?"
"Don't know."
"Uh-huh. And where is this Carl?"
The mimic hesitated for a moment, as it had never really thought about that before. Where was that guy? Was he really in the Beyond? That was where demons normally resided, but Carl seemed to have access to something physical that made clacking noises. Such a thing could not exist in a place that was supposedly made up of dreams, nightmares, and loose thoughts. Then, was he in the material realm? Or some other place?
"Answer me!"
yelled Edward, completely derailing the mimic's train of thought.
"Ah! I don't know!"
The spymaster wrote down, "Carl, Warlock Mentor," in his notes and circled it.
"When did you contract this fiend?"
22 days ago, I think.
"You think?"
"It was dark. Inside," explained the scared monster. "Not sure of actual day. Please no more yelling."
The spymaster regained his composure at the sight of the mimic swaying back and forth in fear while shaking the pale white head sticking out of it. It was oddly pathetic, almost innocent in some weird way. Edward had unwittingly put too much force behind his voice when he heard the monster say, 22 days ago. He could be forgiven for getting excited, though, as that was the same day the calamity happened. He wrote in, "Fiend contract, before or after COM, in his notebook. Of course, he wasn't simply taking the monster's word on all this stuff. Edward was in possession of an ultimate skill called Eyes of Truth, which he obtained when his rogue job hit level 100. It let him pierce the veil on any deception and easily see through both audible and visible lies. That was how he was able to instantly see through the succubus's disguise the day before and apprehend her. It was a powerful ability well suited to his line of work, but he kept it a secret from the rest of the world for 3 reasons. The first of those was religion. If the temples knew he had obtained a skill that was so in tune with the goddess Teresa herself, he'd probably get dragged into all sorts of theological nonsense he wanted no part in. Such things would do nothing but waste his valuable time and attract unwanted attention that interfered with his work. Plus, he was never a particularly pious or God-fearing man anyway, so mingling with the clergy was more or less the opposite of his idea of a good time. The second reason was politics. He knew firsthand that nobles were creatures who lied all the time in order to protect their various interests, which wasn't to say it was always out of ill will, as even the righteous ones had secrets they wished to protect. If they knew of Edward's flawless lie detector, they would likely plot against him or his office, which in turn would just open up more pointless work for the spymaster to deal with. Much like with the clergy, having to entertain the nobility was too much of a nuisance. The third reason was effectiveness. If word spread of his ultimate skill, then that would make it much harder to use. People would choose their words far more carefully or lie by omission and misdirection. Erosa's recent troubles with that nun and her cousin were a prime example of how one could skirt the truth. Speaking of which...
"What of the disappearance of Sister Lyo Rosetta? Did you have anything to do with her?"
"Who?"
"The nun that purportedly stole the holy pearl."
"I don't know such a person."
This was, of course, the truth. Boxy did know of a succubus that stole a holy pearl, but it knew nothing about a nun doing something like that. The old human stared at it for a few seconds before jotting down a note saying that case was probably unrelated. Having warmed up sufficiently, he moved on to the meat of the matter.
"What do you know of the calamity of Monotol?"
"What's a Monotol? Is it tasty?"
"You don't know about that place?"
"No."
The gears started spinning in the spymaster's head. That statement was not a lie, but it didn't mean it was true either. Perhaps it knew the place by another name, so Edward altered his line of questioning.
"Have you ever been inside another city before coming here?"
"Where's here?"
"Erosa."
"What's in Erosa? Is it tasty?"
The spymaster took a deep breath.
"It's the city where I captured you."
"Oh."
The two stared at each other for a while in total silence.
"Well?"
"What?"
"So, have you ever been to another city besides Erosa or not?"
"No."
"Then where were you before coming here?"
"On the road."
Where did you live before moving to Erosa?"
The mimic paused for a moment to consider this question. Did it actually live anywhere? It had been pretty much homeless ever since it got out of the dungeon, So, technically speaking, that was its last place of residence.
Lidagar Dungeon Complex.
So, you were born in that dungeon?
Yes.
Why did you leave it?
Got hungry.
Sweeper was swiftly added to the list.
Have you seen the human city near that dungeon?
Yes.
The old spymaster felt a bit of tension leaving his shoulders. Now they were getting somewhere.
That place is the city of Monotol.
Oh.
So you know of it after all?
Yes.
Did you know it was destroyed?
Yes.
How did you know it was gone?
Saw the smoke cloud.
Did you have anything to do with that?
No.
The monster had just lied for the first time in this interview. Though Edward was not surprised. Right now, this creature's life rested entirely in the hands of a human, and it did not want to openly admit to murdering thousands of his kind. It was clearly a moron, but even it wasn't that stupid. Rather than being infuriated, however, the spymaster was actually delighted. He had finally gotten a real lead on that troublesome case, and the faster he cracked it, the sooner he would be able to get out of here and back to the capital.
"Were you the one who destroyed it?"
he asked.
"No."
This one wasn't a lie, a fact that immediately put a damper on the man's rising mood. As for why his ultimate skill had deemed it so, it was because the truth was a more subjective thing than one might think. If someone held a misinformed opinion without knowing it and shared it out loud, then his words would be honest, regardless of being factually incorrect. In this case, Boxy legitimately believed from the bottom of its soul that it was not responsible for the destruction of Monotol. It was that giant, shiny core and the mysterious voice behind it that were the real culprits. After all, the dungeon was close enough that the city would have been vaporized regardless of whether the mimic dumped the thing on them. So, while it wasn't completely unrelated to the incident, it failed to see how any of that was its fault. Its ability to wholeheartedly deflect blame like this was a truly frightening thing. Edward didn't give up so easily, though. This box knew something, so he decided to keep asking questions until he got the information he wanted.
Did you order your familiar to destroy it, then?
No.
Another truth. In this instance, Boxy had ordered arms to roll a ball into a city. The destruction sort of happened after that.
Did you order anyone to destroy that city?
No.
Did someone tell you to make sure it was destroyed?
Make sure what was destroyed?
The city.
What about it?
Were you working with anyone to help you destroy the city of Monotol?
Oh, no.
Then, are you affiliated with an elven witch in any way?
What's an affiliated? Is it tasty?
Oh, for fuck's sake!
The spymaster had finally lost his cool and leapt out of his chair, punching the obsidian cage. It rattled and the metal bar he hit even bent slightly from the impact. It also reacted like any electrified surface would when something conductive made contact with it. You have been shocked by a jolt of electricity. HP minus 25.
Motherfucker, that stung!
He cursed as he shook his shocked fist. Relatively speaking, the jolt was completely insignificant, but that didn't mean the sudden bolt of pain had been a pleasant one. Edward took a few deep breaths to calm himself. The answers were not an issue. He just had to ask the right question. Deciding to change up his approach yet again, he reached into his tunic and took out a rolled-up parchment.
Okay, look. Do you know this person?
He unfurled it in front of his prisoner, revealing the expertly drawn image of a stern-looking middle-aged elf woman. She had short, spiky hair and a deep vertical scar across her left eye. This was an artist's rendition of the culprit thought to be the main perpetrator behind the act, courtesy of Bernard Samson's testimony.
No.
Again. Not a lie.
Is this succubus, this snack, also your familiar?
Yes.
Did you tell her to disguise herself as an elf?
No.
The man kept going back and forth, exploring the possibility of the succubus pretending to be his suspect, but couldn't get any confirmation. He rightfully felt like he was on the right track, but Boxy had no idea that Zira had gone and done something like that. As such, Edward was completely unable to grasp the connection between the woman in the picture and the box in front of him and was forced to drop that line of questioning. He also considered the possibility of this succubus acting on her own, but he had no way of confirming that.
Do you at least know what happened to the city?
What city?
Edward took another deep breath. These endless questions were getting on his nerves. Normally his silver tongue skill would have his prisoner spilling their guts all on their own, but it seemed ineffective on this particular monster. The way it randomly ignored the context within the conversation was especially troublesome.
How was the city of Monotol destroyed?
It blew up.
Ah! Gah!
This was incredibly infuriating. Something about this moronic box ticked off the spymaster immensely. It was partly his own fault, though. He had briefly forgotten that his ultimate skill was not almighty and that open-ended questions like that last one were the skill's weakness. He had to stick to concise questions whose answer could be a yes or a no if he wanted to get anywhere. After rebuilding his composure yet again, he briefly thought back on what he knew about his captive. He had randomly stumbled upon a rampaging monster that, against all odds, seemed to somehow be connected to the calamity he had come here to investigate. The key to that event was bound to be buried somewhere in the creature's dim-witted mind, but Edward lacked the necessary details to ask the right questions. The animate chest had also shown to be capable of lying in order to protect itself, so simply asking about the how and why was likely pointless. What about a slightly different approach that didn't rely on just words? Granted, he highly doubted it would work on a monster, but it was still worth a try. The spymaster silently left the room, leaving Boxy all on its own. One would imagine this would be the mimic's perfect chance to make a break for it, but it did no such thing. It remained perfectly still, suspended inside its electrified cage. Of course it wanted to escape, to break free and to get away from that dangerous being that called itself a man, but it had no way of doing so. Boxy's MP was currently zero, and automatic MP recovery had been disabled. The cause was unknown, but that was its current reality. It had to admit, whoever or whatever was responsible for its imprisonment knew what they were doing, as Boxy couldn't do anything to escape without MP. Storage was inaccessible, acid spray was unusable, mend flesh was disabled, metal mimicry wouldn't function, and spells were right out. The only skill that still had a use was shapeshift, but that wouldn't let it break out of this specially prepared cage. How come it was always those insufferable grates that got in its way? Several minutes passed in total silence before Boxy once again heard the sound of a metal door opening in the distance.
"Please don't! I didn't do anything!"
came a familiar squeaky voice.
"You can't do this to me!"
"I can, actually," answered Edward's voice. "You are my prisoner, after all."
He appeared before Boxy once more, carrying Fizzy by the scruff of her neck as if she were a large bag. The gnome's work clothes were gone, replaced by a rough-looking brown poncho that covered her torso and upper thighs. It looked less like a piece of clothing and more like an old potato sack. Her arms and shoulders were bare and her legs were exposed from the thighs down. Her bruised ankles and wrists were cuffed by cast-iron shackles and bound together by sturdy-looking chains that rattled forebodingly as she was swung about.
"No!"
she screamed the moment her eyes met Boxy's.
"Please!"
she struggled desperately, waving her arms and legs all about and shaking her head.
"Quiet down, prisoner," said Edward.
"But that thing, it's evil! Get it away!
She was thrown roughly to the ground, landing just centimeters away from the cage.
"I said shut up, before I make you."
The gnome whimpered in pain and curled up into the fetal position. "This isn't happening," had been repeating inside her head over and over ever since she woke up in her cell. She wished she could at least tell her side of the story, but nobody was willing to listen. They didn't even tell her why she was here.
"Better," the spymaster said coldly. "Now then, you in the cage. Do you know this girl?"
"Yes."
The calm, oddly monotone voice made the gnome freeze and caused her manic thoughts to grind to a halt.
"Is she important to you?"
"Yes."
"What is this girl's relationship to you?"
asked the old man in spite of himself.
"Was teacher. Now betrayer."
Fizzy looked up at the suspended monster despite herself, She wanted to retort somehow, but the words wouldn't come out of her throat. Objectively looking at it, that was exactly what she was. It also meant this creature, despite everything, had trusted her in some way. There could be no betrayal without trust, after all. She then curled up even harder to chase away those dangerous thoughts. Nothing good could come from thinking of monsters as anything other than heartless.
Teacher, eh?
As for Edward, his mind was already putting the puzzle together. Of course, he was well aware of what this gnome was capable of. The appraisal check she went through while unconscious made it clear exactly what her job and skills were.
So, she taught you the artificer job?
Yes.
Was that all she taught you about?
Yes.
Does her teaching relate in any way to the calamity of Mon Atal?
No.
Calamity?
Stammered Fizzy. Her thoughts started running wild again.
Oh?
Asked Edward, smoothly shifting his focus to the gnome on the ground.
You didn't know that this mimic was involved in that?
No, I had no idea.
Come to think of it.
The man's voice trailed off as he began searching through his notebook. He found the entry concerning the site of a smashed-up caravan that had been found on the Imperial Highway between Mon Atal and Erosa.
Here we go. Rory and Lark Fizzlespricket. Your family, I presume?
The gnome's eyes went wide when her deceased father and brother were mentioned out of the blue. Anger flared up in her heart at him for besmirching their family name like that, but she quickly quelled it. Pointlessly antagonizing her captor was a really stupid idea.
Yes,
she answered meekly.
Interesting. You know, we never actually found any of the bodies. You wouldn't know anything about that. Would you, gnome?
He considered the possibility of them being somehow connected to the calamity and faking their deaths to go underground. Surely they must have mentioned something to their only living kin if they had such designs.
Of course not!
Operative word being if.
What about you?
Asked the spymaster, turning to Boxy.
Did you have anything to do with a 3-wagon caravan along the Imperial Highway north of here?
Yes.
Fizzy's eyes became even wider as she gazed at Boxy in complete shock.
Was this after the destruction of Mon Atal?
Yes.
He was convinced they were talking about the same thing. All merchant traffic going in and out of Erosa was logged, and that convoy was the only one that fit both the timing and the description. Well, it had taken a while to confirm this since they never found one of the wagons, but the personal effects recovered from the scene left no doubt as to the owner's identity.
So you were at the site of that ambush?
Yes.
Did you come upon it before it was attacked?
No.
After the attack?
No.
So you happened upon it while it was already under attack?
Yes.
He scribbled some more details in his notebook while Fizzy listened intensely. She was so nervous she felt like her heart was going to leap through her skull.
Did you kill everyone there?
No.
She relaxed a bit.
But you killed some of them?
Yes.
Then panicked.
Did that include 2 male gnomes?
No.
Then came relief.
So they're still alive?
No.
Followed by grim acceptance.
Then where are their bodies?
I ate them.
That instantly turned into rage.
You bastard!
Screamed Fizzy, unable to handle this roller coaster of emotions. A boot forced her down to the cold stone ground. It mercilessly pressed upon her back, squeezing the air out of her lungs. It was as if a mountain had just sat down on top of her, robbing her of the ability to speak or even breathe properly. Although it did little to stem the flow of tears streaming from her eyes. She'd known they were dead, even if the bodies were never found. She just knew. But hearing that this creature had brazenly eaten them felt like the ultimate insult to their memory.
So they were dead when you found them?
Yes.
What about the adventurer escort? Did you kill them?
Yes.
Bandits as well?
Yes.
You ate all of those people too?
Yes.
Why?
Because they were there.
That was it. Nothing more, nothing less. Boxy was a monster. A creature that attacked others without warning and for little reason. The kind of thing that only saw the lives of others as an obstacle between itself and its goals. The metal door outside of the mimic's field of vision opened up once more, followed by numerous sets of footsteps. A squad of several armored guards stood in front of the spymaster and saluted him respectfully.
"Spymaster Allen, sir,"
said the one with the extra shiny hat.
"We're ready for you."
"Excellent. I think we're about done here. Show this creature to the site. I will be there shortly. And do be careful with the cage. Don't want to lose any fingers."
"Yes, sir."
Edward picked the gnome up off the floor and left the jail cell to give the men enough space. Four men walked into the room and stared at the bizarre creature with looks of clear apprehension. One of them went over to the box that was stuck to the side of the cage, unlocked it, and flipped one of the switches on the inside. The electrical current coursing through the metal bars died down immediately. The cage was then picked up and carried out of the dank cell and towards the surface.
"Where are they taking it?"
Fizzy asked in a quivering voice once they had gone. Edward dropped her roughly on the ground.
"Nowhere that's of any concern to you, prisoner."
Fizzy sat up and glared at the man.
"Why am I even here?"
"You seriously don't know?"
"No, nobody has told me anything about it."
"Why, it's because you have to pay for your crimes, of course."
"What crimes?"
"Let's start with gross negligence that led to the death of others."
"What?"
"Your incompetence sent that creature into a murderous rampage that not only cost the lives of at least 20 of the city's protectors, but also caused a riot that resulted in the death of 15 more civilians and dozens more injured."
What? You're pinning that thing's behavior on me?"
"Are you saying your rash actions did not set that chain of events into motion?"
But what was I supposed to do? Some monster was messing with my brain."
"Did you not think to hire adventurers?"
Fizzy was struck speechless. Of course that had been the best possible solution. That much was painfully obvious now that someone else had pointed it out. Even if she was worried the guards wouldn't believe her words, there was no way sellswords wouldn't believe her gold. Dealing with monsters was their specialty, after all. If one thought about things logically, then, one could indeed say her failure to handle the monster had set off a dreadful chain of events. She refused to believe it, though.
"I'm not buying it,"
she insisted.
"How is any of that negligence? If anyone's at fault, it's the shitty guards who can't do the jobs my taxes are paying them for."
It was a valid argument. Keeping monsters outside the walls or subduing them should they get in was the responsibility of local law enforcement. There was no way a peace-loving citizen could be expected to rationally handle a situation where they found themselves confronted with a monster. This victim-blaming nonsense that was being thrown at her was ridiculous, to say the least. Edward, however, completely ignored her protests and continued piling it on.
"You also taught it a job without verifying its identity with an appraisal. Moreover, you failed to register yourself as a mentor, nor did you apply for the appropriate teaching license."
Okay, he had a point there. Those things were undoubtedly illegal, but the treatment she was getting did not match those administrative misdemeanors.
"Then let me pay my fines and get on with my life,"
she insisted.
"And it is the result of my observations that I have found you guilty of colluding with a foreign power to knowingly and willingly spread chaos within His Majesty's territory."
With a completely deadpan voice, this human had just said the most ludicrous thing she'd ever heard. Fizzy understood at once that her imprisonment was never a matter of guilt or innocence, but simply this man's whim. And she couldn't do anything about it. After all, if someone in power wanted a commoner, especially a non-human like her, thrown in prison, then they could make up any myriad of reasons and nobody would bat an eye.
"Why?"
she asked with a shaky voice.
"What do you want from me?"
See, we have a good old-fashioned war brewing, and I would very much like your assistance with the war preparations."
As wondrous as they were, the vast majority of an artificer's creations were weapons. Instruments of death and destruction that could be used by anyone after a bit of training. It was a relatively young profession whose military applications had not been fully explored yet. Edward was quite keen to get ahead of the curve in that regard, and this pink-haired gnome was the perfect pawn to assist with unlocking that potential in secret. Granted, it wasn't a project high on his priority list, but he wouldn't pass up the opportunity that presented itself to him.
"You can't make me do that!"
Fizzy insisted.
"Oh, but I can," answered Edward. "You're a convicted prisoner. Military service is your sentence."
The gnome's heart sank. Her father always believed artificers could be more than merchants of death, that their craft could be used for the betterment of life, instead of simply ending it. He dedicated his life's work towards that noble goal. All of his research and experiments were simply intended to create devices of convenience and nothing more. And while he did design and build a few weapons, those were only meant as a means of self-defense with the intention to stun and incapacitate, rather than kill. He was no pacifist, but that did not mean he wanted to be a murderer. A naive and foolish ideal that had been hammered into Fizzy since her birth.
"Don't worry," said the old man with a rotten smile on his face. "I'm sure you'll work off your debt to society after a few decades of hard labor."
He tossed her inside the cell Boxy had been in just a minute ago and shut the door, then walked off after the other guards. Part 3. The Emperor's spymaster walked out of the dungeon and into the courtyard of Erosa's central castle. The ground was hard-packed dirt with not a scrap of vegetation left after being trampled on by countless pairs of feet on a daily basis. He made his way across the open space and went into the 17-meter-tall white stone tower that housed the city's branch of the Arcanium. The Arcanium was a government-controlled guild in charge of magical study and research. Although jobs and skills came prepackaged with their own crafting recipes, enchantments, and spells, that did not mean it was impossible to develop new ones. It was considerably difficult, time-consuming, and expensive, but it was definitely possible. This was the Arcanium's primary function, but by no means the only one. The organization's secondary duty was to investigate, document, and, if necessary, contain and or dissect the bizarre and illogical. In a way, it was an oddly fitting place for Boxy's upcoming appraisal, as it was clearly an anomalous creature. Initially, the spymaster had foregone analyzing his monstrous prisoner's status because he thought it a waste of time. After all, it was borderline impossible to properly assess a monster's natural job and skills if the one doing the inspection wasn't enlightened. Enlightened was the general term used to collectively refer to the civilized races of this world. The ones that flocked together, hid behind walls, and achieved their goals as a species mostly through wits, intelligence, and tools. They had a completely different way of thinking and understanding from the predominantly violent and highly instinctive monsters they shared a world with. It was a gap between their mental states that was impossible to bridge, which was why appraisal, be it basic or full, tended to be mostly useless on monsters. If attempted, the only outcome the appraiser would get was a head filled with garbled gibberish. There was one exception to this, however. If the scribe performing the check was extremely knowledgeable about the monster being appraised, then it was possible to lift the veil on its skills and jobs. The catch was that such a level of understanding could only be achieved after years of study, research, and autopsy of that specific species of monster. Unfortunately, Edward's personal scribe was no scholar, so the most she would normally get out of a monster's status was its HP and MP. Maybe the attribute scores if they were lucky. As it turned out, however, the spymaster's box-shaped prisoner had two enlightened jobs. The interrogation had revealed that it was both a warlock and an artificer, in addition to somehow being involved in the calamity. Hence the reason Edward found himself very eager to find out exactly what the appraisal might reveal. He walked into the Arcanium Tower and went to its basement. This served as a ceremonial chamber used to perform the various rituals and rites the tower's residents required. It was a wide open space about 10 by 15 meters in size and an abnormally high ceiling almost 4 meters tall. Stone support columns dotted the inside and rows of bookshelves lined the walls. Tomes, parchments, paints, bushels of dried herbs, bowls of powdered substances, chunks of ores, jars of pickled monster parts, and a plethora of other resources, ingredients, and reagents were all lined up and waiting to be put to use. Plain-looking chandeliers adorned with white magical lights dangled from the ceiling, bathing the subterranean chamber with so much light it appeared brighter than the outdoors. The floor itself was covered in dull, gray brickwork, almost like the dungeon Edward had just left. A significant part of it was charred, scratched, cracked, or otherwise stained with various dried-up substances, likely remnants of past rituals. The spymaster looked around and spotted a group of 5 individuals in the far corner, huddled around the familiar black cage. He approached them briskly, eager to move his interrogation of the monster to the next step. He'd given the order to prepare this space the instant he realized his prisoner was a warlock, but it took a while to have those wand twirlers vacate the chamber. It would not be an exaggeration to say this was a national security situation, so minimizing potential intelligence leaks was a given. Ideally, he wouldn't have done this in such a relatively public place, but this spot was necessary for what he planned to do.
Sir!
The 4 guards that had escorted the monster there saluted him respectfully when they noticed his approach. He returned the salute.
Thank you, gentlemen. That will be all. Leave us and inform the rest of the Arcanium we are not to be disturbed. Do not let anyone in here unless it is literally a matter of life or death, or else it will become one. Understood?
Yes, sir!
The guardsmen quickly made their way out without uttering another peep. They didn't quite know who this stranger was, but none dared speak up against him. They'd been told he was their superior in both rank and ability, which was all they needed to know. Besides, it was common knowledge around the keep that he had subdued that vicious creature with a single blow. He was far more intimidating in person, though, to the point that a few of them were inwardly questioning which one was the real monster. Edward waited for the men to leave the basement, then turned to face the last person remaining in the chamber. She was a woman with a seemingly average height and build, shoulder-length black hair, and slanted yellow eyes. Her face was mature and attractive, but her ice-cold expression was severe enough to send chills down one spine. Her outfit consisted of an armor set nearly identical in design to Edward's, clearly marking her as one of his subordinates.
"Zone, are you ready for the appraisal yet?"
he asked matter-of-factly. The woman nodded.
"Get to it, then, and give me the short version."
The female operative walked up to the caged monster, which studied her curiously with its out-of-place head. She unlocked the powered-down cage and walked inside. She reached out over its head and placed a hand on its lid, an act which caused Boxy quite a bit of distress. It instinctively wanted to lash out and hurt this woman, but an overpowering glare from that man quickly erased any such rebellious thoughts. Besides, it wasn't like it would hurt, right? Adventurers supposedly did this sort of thing all the time, after all. The woman called Zone opened her mouth and quietly chanted 2 words.
"Full appraisal."
Boxy immediately felt an extremely disturbing sensation, as if countless tiny insects had come out of her hand and spread out across its surface, then burrowed into its faux wood shell. The invisible bugs that weren't actually there enveloped it completely, crawling and tasting it all over. A few seconds later, the woman started reporting on its status in a quiet, monotone voice.
"Name, Boxy T. Morningwood. Greater Mimic. 3 months old. HP at 1,524. MP at 1,210. Monster job. Unknown. Assumed level 40 to 50 based on the number of unknowable skills. Level 25 Warlock. Summon Familiar 7. Power Overwhelming 6. Demonology 6. Crystallized Magic 5. Level 12 Artificer. Clockwork Expertise 3. Explosives Handling 2. General skills consist of Stealth 7, an unknowable skill assumed to be Shapeshift, and a total of 6 mastery skills, ranging from 3 to 8.
Having finished her duty, she took her hand off the chest. The disgusting sensations permeating Boxy's body stopped instantly, leaving it with a feeling of somehow being violated. It was not a tasty sensation.
"Hmm. It's quite tough for its level, isn't it? Mused the spymaster. I'm starting to see how it could kill so many guards so quickly. Also, a total of over 75 levels in 3 months? Well, all things considered, that's perhaps even a little low. Zone, is that there?
Yes, Butcher of Humanity perk is present.
So, it was that after all, huh?
The Slayer series of perks were received after killing hundreds upon thousands of beings of the same species. The first rank, known as Slayer, was awarded after one had killed 500 of a specific species. Getting that kill count up to 2,000 would upgrade the perk to Hunter. Racking up 5,000 would turn one into a Butcher, and 20,000 would turn them into a natural enemy. However, although these perks did raise one's prowess when fighting a specific species, they also had an additional side effect that was not readily apparent. Much like Taboo, the Slayer series of perks altered the way others perceived the holder, and it grew stronger with each upgrade stage. In this monster's case, humans would feel an instinctive fear that caused them to shy away from it. Edward himself felt it, although it took him a while to notice since his Nerves of Steel skill dulled the effects of external mental influences like that. It wasn't until he had spoken to the creature for a few minutes that he did start feeling an odd sense of unease, followed by beads of cold sweat forming in his palms for no apparent reason. It affected him even though he had reached job level 100 and ranked up to become an Ascendant, a being significantly stronger, faster, and smarter than a regular human. Edward rubbed his temple.
I should have just started with the appraisal, he grumbled.
He felt foolish for thinking it wouldn't yield any useful information. He trusted his common sense and wasted his own time. But it was hardly a bad call. After all, who would have thought this simple creature would be capable of gaining not only one, but two jobs that would normally be inaccessible to such a monster? The Artificer one had clearly been taught by the gnome, which meant the Warlock one was likely taught by some equally naive Warlock trainer. Or a malicious one. Still, after interrogating both its mind and body, he was finally convinced. This creature was the culprit behind the calamity. He wasn't sure how the simple being eluded his eyes of truth earlier, though. Actually, being simple-minded was probably why it gave him so much trouble in the first place. Regardless of its mental faculties, this Boxy was guilty beyond the shadow of a doubt. There was simply no other way it could have killed 5,000 people in just 3 months. Edward was personally familiar with just how high a number that was. He himself was only a Slayer of Humanity and a Slayer of Elfkind, despite having performed assassinations and carrying out raids on criminal hideouts for many decades. That was fine by him, though, as he didn't want to upgrade them, if at all possible. Perks like that were more trouble than they were worth sometimes. In fact, some of them could be almost as damning as a high level of Taboo. They were evidence of one's past actions that would be easily laid bare with a full appraisal, regardless of the holder's wishes. And yet he'd held off having one done on this mimic until he deemed it was absolutely necessary. After all, a full appraisal could only be performed once every 24 hours. Guilds could afford to have multiple scribes on their payroll, but Edward could not risk any of this information leaking out. He only brought one subordinate with him who was capable of performing a full appraisal, so he had to be prudent with its usage. And now that it was done, he would take full advantage of it.
Zone, does it have any other perks?
Yes, 5 in total. 1 unknowable, Arcane Assassin, Butcher of Humanity, Collateral Damage, and Grand Theft Arcana.
Wait, no Hero Killer?
Negative.
The perk in question had no effects beyond marking someone as taking part in slaying a chosen of the gods. It was one of those troublesome stigmas on one's status that could be used as evidence to get them convicted of manslaughter on the spot. This monster not having it was surprising, though. Then again, Bernard Sampson, the chosen hero of Teresa, had supposedly been revived by the goddess almost instantly, so it was possible the perk was invalidated or the kill didn't count. Edward had never heard of the divines outright reviving a person like that, so it was hard for him to accurately say one way or the other. Rather than dwell on what was missing, the spymaster considered what was already there. The perk that Zone referred to as unknowable was likely something exclusive to monsters, or she would have recognized it. Collateral damage was to be expected of something that blew up an entire city. Arcane Assassin was something one of his other subordinates possessed, and that perk made sense, considering the Mimic was a warlock with stealth. It was likewise possible that one of its unreadable skills was the assassination skill, which Edward also had as part of his rogue job. Unfortunately, even if this creature had the same ability, it would have come from its monster job and would be incomprehensible to a meathead like Zone. However, it was the last perk in that list that piqued his interest the most.
"Grand Theft Arcana?"
he asked, raising an eyebrow. Zone's eyes stared off into the distance as she focused her attention on Boxy's status screen that was still in her mind.
"Awarded for taking a dungeon core out of its dungeon,"
she reported in the same dull monotone.
"Reward is a +10 to all attributes. The subject has performed this feat once."
"Such a thing can happen, huh? I see. So that's what it was."
When the hero, Bernard Sampson, described the giant orb thought to be the source of the calamity, it painted the image of an oversized dungeon core. Edward was no expert on the matter, but general knowledge dictated that the size of those things was directly proportional to the amount of mystical energy they controlled. Therein lay the problem, though, as the Lidigar dungeon complex next to Monatol, which would be the most likely origin of said core, was much too weak to produce one of that size. The place had completely caved in from the blast and was within range of the ever-swirling death cloud, so there was no way to verify if its core was still there. At least until this monster's status had given Edward all the confirmation he needed. Not that Boxy had any idea that its deed had been exposed. It was still immensely nervous, however. It had just been through its first and highly unpleasant appraisal, the thing that it had determined must be avoided at all costs. It was afraid of what would happen to it, of whether this terrifying human and that similarly dressed woman would just kill it off on the spot. Still, it held on to a feeling vaguely resembling hope. They clearly wanted something from it, or they would have eliminated it already. It was the same reasoning the Mimic itself had used when it tried to run away with that gnome in tow.
"Interesting," Edward mused as he tapped his chin. "Very interesting indeed. We'll have to bring it back to headquarters so Hook can extract the details from it. We might even be able to avoid asking Arcanium for assistance."
It seemed Boxy was right in assuming its life would be spared, at least for the moment. If they were transporting it somewhere else, then that could present it with a good opportunity to escape.
"In the meantime, let's make sure it doesn't try to pull anything too clever. Zone, get rid of those two jobs."
The Mimic's head swiveled around to look up at the black-haired woman standing next to it with a panicked stare. Get rid of jobs? Was such a thing really possible?
"What if the warlock job is necessary?"
she asked.
"Irrelevant. We just need its memory. Do it."
Judging from their exchange and the mechanical way that woman was moving her hands towards it, Boxy quickly concluded that its jobs were indeed in danger. It felt a type of fear distinctly different than that of death. It was something it hadn't felt since its connection to its home dungeon was severed. The fear of the unknown. That wasn't all, though. It also felt anger. Rage, even. How dare these damned humans attempt to separate it from what was rightfully its own? Did they even know how much time, effort, money, and murder it had to go through to get those jobs to their current state? Desperate and cornered, it lashed out. A dozen fleshy tendrils sprang forth from its surface and wrapped around the woman's hands, feet, and neck. Now that it had hold of a hostage, it just needed to...
"Hmph!"
it groaned.
"Eh?" "Hmph!"
It tried to spin her around, pin her down, and threaten her, but it couldn't. She didn't budge a muscle no matter how much it pulled on her limbs. In fact, if anyone was getting pulled in this situation, it was the Mimic whose suspended body leaned closer towards Zone. The monster should have been the heavier one, yet Boxy felt as if it was trying to pull down a mountain. At the unexpected assault, Zone had briefly stopped her movements, but she did not appear to mind the interruption. No, that wasn't quite right. The unfazed way she carried on, despite the shapeshifter's utmost effort, made it seem like she didn't even register its attempts at taking her hostage. As if this monster's full strength was little more than a bad joke to her. That may actually have been the case, given the tiny smile on her normally expressionless face. In the end, she placed her hand upon the chest once more, completely unhindered by its attempts at restraining her.
Job removal. Warlock.
A trio of previously inert runes etched into the stone floor under the cage lit up in response to her quiet words. A white light flowed forth from them and enveloped Boxy, drowning out the creature's senses and assaulting its consciousness. Proficiency level decreased. Crystallized magic is no longer available. Intelligence -10. Wisdom -10. Proficiency level decreased. Demonology is now level 5. Wisdom -2. Mental fortitude -2. Proficiency level decreased. Power overwhelming is no longer available. Intelligence -24. Proficiency level decreased. Summon familiar is no longer available. Intelligence -14. Wisdom -7. Mental fortitude -7. Your warlock job has been removed. Intelligence -50. Mental fortitude -50. Endurance -50. It was over in an instant. The stress of having its skills and attributes removed all at once rendered the monster unconscious. Its tendrils uncoiled themselves from Zone and hung limply down to the ground. The next time it woke up, it would find that all the knowledge it had regarding magic and demons was now gone, obliterated from its mind as if it was never there. Well, almost all of it.
Odd,
said Zone.
Demonology won't go below level 5.
What? Why not? Edward asked.
Unknown.
But the warlock job and its other skills were successfully removed?
Yes.
Edward had made sure to brush up on his knowledge of warlocks and their familiars ever since he heard demons were involved in the Monotol case. As such, he was familiar with the summon familiar and demonology skills and had already deduced his monstrous prisoner was in possession of them during the interview. Exactly why the second of those refused to go away completely was beyond his understanding. But it wasn't necessarily an issue.
It's good enough, he stated. Demonology is practically useless on its own anyway.
The monster would probably retain some knowledge pertaining to demonic rituals and lore, but the skill's main function was to upgrade summon familiar, which was no longer in its possession. Not only did it now lack the means to call out its pet demons, but their contracts would be severed as well.
Do the next one,
he commanded, and Zone complied.
Job removal. Artificer.
Proficiency level decreased. Explosives handling is no longer available. Dexterity -4. Wisdom -4. Proficiency level decreased. Clockwork expertise is no longer available. Dexterity -6. Perception -6. Your artificer job has been removed. Dexterity -24. Wisdom -24. Perception -24. More untasty notifications flashed inside the mimic's mind, but its owner was currently out for the count.
Done. No abnormalities, Zone reported.
Good,
said Edward, while staring absent-mindedly at the unconscious monster.
Very good indeed. Looks like we're done here.
Zone tilted her head.
We are? What about the elf connection?
Non-existent. As expected, this entire incident was either a fluke or an accident rather than an elven conspiracy.
Of course, the spymaster never quite believed those knife-ears were actually responsible for something like the calamity of Monotol. He'd kept his mind open to the possibility, but a man of his experience was able to easily sense that the young hero had been deceived. And while it certainly helped that he caught and spoke with the real perpetrator, he really didn't need to do that in order to doubt the young man's words. The testimony still served to pin the blame on the twig-infested nation to the north, but that was a bit divorced from reality. To begin with, the cowards of the Ishigar Republic to the north would never dare incur the wrath of the Lodrak Empire. Their territory may have been larger than the Empire's at a glance, but they were far behind when it came to matters of military strength. And while such acts of terrorism were right up their alley, they were far too competent to be responsible for the farce at Mon Atol. If an